Let's jump right into it with Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm Dan McLaughlin. Derek is covering the World Series in Texas. It has been unique, Derek, to have a neutral site. First of all, great to hear you. How are things?
Good. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm doing well. Neutral site, what do you think? Has this been good for baseball?
No. I mean, it's been good for baseball now, but it shouldn't be applied anywhere else. I mean, I don't think this – I think this should be isolated to this this current time we're in, and it's a response to, you know, the circumstance, right? They got to have a bubble. They got to put a bubble somewhere, and this place is as good as any. I think it's a nice showcase for a new ballpark, and I'm glad Texas got that. Obviously, there's the other added part of it here is that they have it in Texas where they could have a crowd. Some other places, like if they planted it in St. Louis, they're not having a crowd. So they're able to sell tickets and stuff to it here despite the rising rate of infections in this area. But here we are. But I think overall, no, this is not. I'm not one of the people who buy into the neutral site concept, the Super Bowl concept. Scott Boras is a big believer in that. He'd like to see baseball move the World Series to a neutral site so there can be planning for events around it, so that it can be a kind of a showcase event similar to, say, the College World Series or the Super Bowl or, you know, any of those things that they know where they're going to be. There's bidding on where it's going to be, like the All-Star game, right? And they can kind of build all the ceremony around it. I'm not like that. I had last night's imagine how game four would have been
with a home crowd.
Yeah. The home crowd at Tampa Bay, because that was a Tampa Bay home game. Imagine how game one would have been at Dodger Stadium with Clayton Kershaw pitching like that. You know, just things like that. I mean, that's where baseball belongs. It belongs at home. It's a home game. They went to great lengths to play at home during a pandemic, during the regular season. That was so that they could be part of the community, so they could be in the community. This was a big thing for the players. This was a big thing to try to pull off for baseball. So how can they just discard that and say, yeah, we like neutral site World Series? No. Baseball is about being home. Baseball is about getting home. Let's keep the World Series the way it is, where the teams play at home.
One thing I have loved, though, about the postseason this year, the expanded postseason, I think this has been great for baseball, and I hope they do it moving forward.
I like the series. I like the fact that there's not a one-game play-in game. I like the fact that everyone was a series, you know, so that's a positive. I think expanded playoffs are here to stay. It does make for a long playoff, you know, but it adds a riveting layer to it. I think, you know, that's something to keep in mind.
In terms of what you've seen in this series, Kershaw has been really good in this postseason.
Really good.
It maybe changes the narrative a little bit, especially if they win for him on a personal level. It could be their first world championship in 32 years. And then you have the question, is it legitimate in a 60-game season? So a lot of things to juggle in this World Series. How do you size up some of those subjects?
Well, it's legitimate. I think the team that wins this thing has gone through a lot to get there. You know, the Dodgers are in their fourth week at the same hotel. A lot of these players, you know, on the Rays and on the Dodgers have gone all of those weeks without their families. They're not all of them are lucky enough to be able to have, you know, to have a wife and kids to move into the bubble. Some guys are alone in the bubble. You know, not to mention all the testing that they have to go through, all the regimen and all the protocols that they had to go through during the season, all the things that they had to do. I think that, you know, this championship is legitimate in ways that, just in different ways of surviving the marathon and then exceeding in October. You know, this is a championship of, you know, discipline and dedication to the protocols, and then just outlasting other teams in a sprint. There was no easing into this season. There was no easing through this season. There was no like cutting innings early to have them available late, and there was none of that. This was all pedal to the metal, you know, in fifth gear from the word go. Oh, and you also had to follow tons of COVID-19 protocols that obviously caught up with two teams. But other teams had to do their best to, you know, not all of them followed it to the letter of the law. Not all of them followed it to a T, but they still did enough to to keep the virus from leaking into their clubhouse, from seeping into the game, from stopping the season. And I think that makes this championship very much legitimate.
It's been interesting, too, Derek Gould, is you look at the St. Louis aspect of the World Series. You got a couple of guys
so
that, you know, have local ties. You had a Sheriff pitch the other day, which I thought was great to see him. And then you have the one guy that everybody's talking about, Randy Arozarena.
Fairbanks?
Well, Fairbanks is getting some of the publicity, but the other guy's getting a lot. What are people saying on a national level about how this all took place with the Cardinals, Arozarena, and Tampa Bay?
I get a lot of questions as to why that trade happened. I think on a national level, there's not this real sense that, there's not a whole lot of ideas to who came back in that trade because, right, Matthew Liberatore is not yet in the majors. He's a prospect. And so you got to have to kind of have your eye on the farm to know who came back in that trade, whereas all eyes are on Randy this October. So I get a lot of questions about that, what the Cardinals didn't see and how could they let this guy go? Does this have staying power? You get that question a lot too. Or is anything different about Randy or Arozarena? All those questions have fascinating answers. The Cardinals traded Arozarena in part because the Rays wanted to make that deal. The Cardinals had right-handed depth in the outfield. We all know that. They were trying to move some of those guys. They were actively shopping a lot of right-handed outfielders. The Rays had longstanding interest in Jose Martinez and wanted to make that deal. The Cardinals were really, really interested in adding to their left-handed depth and wanted to find, if they could, a significant prospect. And Liberatore is one of the top prep prospect or one of the top left-handed pitchers out of high school, still one of the top left-handed prospects who was drafted out of high school, very young guy. Great pals with Nolan Gorman, as a lot of folks in St. Louis will know. So, it was a fit for the Cardinals. And, to make that deal happen, Jose Martinez was obviously the guy that Tampa targeted. But to increase the likelihood of getting Liberatore back or to make that possible, they added in the outfielder. I don't know if other outfielders were talked about per se. I do know that the Rays at one point in time had talked to the Cardinals about O'Neill, that they had some interest there. I don't know if the Cardinals resisted trading him or if the Rays said we'd rather have Arozarena this time around. But the Cardinals felt they had depth, and so they made that move. What's changed is, Arozarena is a much bigger guy than the guy who played for the Cardinals. The story behind that is interesting because he dealt with COVID-19. He had a positive test, then kept getting positive tests. He said he was asymptomatic, never felt ill, but constantly got, regularly got positive tests for 3 weeks, or a little bit more than 3 weeks. That kept him away from the Rays, obviously, kept him in quarantine. He couldn't do much. They tried to deliver, or they set up a thing to deliver groceries to him, so he taught himself to cook. And he also just did something crazy, like 300 push-ups a day,
yeah,
or something like that.
Right.
And so he just built on, he just used the time in quarantine to just build muscle. And he did that. He's 15 pounds heavier than when they saw him in spring training. So that's obviously, and it's not just like adding 15 pounds by like just eating in quarantine and watching Netflix. It was what he taught himself to cook. It was the lean meals that he taught himself to cook. A lot of chicken and rice, he was saying, and just was able to pack on strength. And so he's a different guy than the one that the Cardinals had. And then, does this have staying power? Well, the guy's hit everywhere he's gone. He's hit. He's just hit. Put him in a league and he's hit there. So, I don't know. The trend says that he's in this spot now. He certainly has a lot of confidence and he hits. So, I think next year for the Rays, he's going to be a regular and everyday player and he's probably going to hit. Now, is he going to hit 360? No, probably not. Is he going to hit 20 home runs? Sure. That's reasonable.
That would be reasonable. I'm curious too, Derek, as you talk to other writers and Rob Manfred has addressed this a little bit, but what are you hearing about the start of spring training and the season next year? Even if COVID-19 is still here and a vaccine is out and those kind of things. I mean, they have dealt now with the virus and got through a season, but what are you hearing about looking ahead to 2021?
I mean, lots of questions. They obviously have a spring training schedule out. They have a 2021 schedule out. So they have optimism. They want to at least put it out there on paper that they want to start on time. But there's the usual questions that go with that. And then they know that they're not in control. That's been the big thing, is they did their best within the bounds of the control that they had to, you know, create a way for the game to be played and move around the country. I mean, I think that should not be ignored. And yes, they had the outbreaks. Yes, they had the 18 players, I believe it was, with the Marlins, and the 10 players with the Cardinals, and 18 members of the Cardinals traveling party total. They had the two outbreaks, the significant outbreaks, and then they pivoted and moved and learned, and they evolved, and the protocols, you know, changed over time. When the season started, there was not going to be playoffs in the bubble. When the season ended, here we are in the World Series, and the World Series is a bubble. I think, you know, they did their best to learn as they went. And they're going to have to do the same here in the off season as spring training and the 2021 season approaches. You know, what can they do? Could they do 162 game schedule like this under these parameters? That's a lot. That's a long haul. A lot more travel involved. You know, you're talking about hundreds and thousands of more tests. You know, they've already repurposed the lab there in Salt Lake City to run their tests, but that also means that, you know, that lab will be focused on the coronavirus tests and not on performance enhancing drug tests. So, you know, there's a lot for baseball to kind of consider, and all of it hinges on the fact the one thing that they can't control is the virus's spread in our country. You know, like we're seeing rising rates all around us. That's all, you know. You just turn on the news and you can hear all about the rising rates are coming back. You know, is this the second wave or the third wave or the fall wave or the flu season wave or whatever you want to call it? So what does it look like in January? What do things look like in February?
Sure.
Are they going to partition baseball off into the Cactus League and the Grapefruit League and try to create these spring training bubbles? That's entirely possible. Are they going to push the start of the season back and hope to buy time? Maybe if there's going to be a vaccine, that's entirely possible. So there's a lot of things on the table, a lot of questions, but they just don't have answers. And that's because we as a whole don't have answers.
There's a lot of questions pertaining to the Cardinals too, with, you know, Molina, Wainwright, Wong. And I guess the biggest question would be, if you have fans, you can set a budget. So you have an understanding of what you have coming in and what goes out. So how do you think the Cardinals handle free agency in just a general sense, and then dealing with their own free agents too?
I think they have to, I mean, you're right. I think they're going to have this situation where they got to have a plan in place where if they can sell tickets, they got to have a realistic look at, you know, what that feels like. I mean, is it going to be 40,000 in the stands next year? I mean, they can't count on that. Is it going to be 11,000 like it is at the World Series? Maybe that's possible. Is it going to be 50% capacity? I mean, that whatever they deal with, they have to think of a budget that is reduced, significantly reduced, and maybe even have some streamlining elsewhere. And what that looks for the payroll would be fascinating. You know, they got to make a call probably first on Colton Wong, and then, you know, kind of move their way through the choices from there so that they know what their payroll is before they go plunging into free agency. And that would include, you know, what does Molina come back as? I mean, as far as salary goes, does Wainwright come back? Does he want a Xerox copy of his most recent contracts, or has he earned more because of the way he pitched? Or does he want to do a half season deal? Cause this thing worked out so well. Is that something that they want to talk to him about? Is like, hey, look, you know, want you back next season? Would it be mutually advantageous for it not to be for the whole season, to do a Roger Clemens type thing? They're going to have to get creative in the way. And I think they'll be looking for more short-term fixes than long-term commitments. this market could actually offer that. As unappetizing as it probably sounds to fans, where when I say that they have short-term eyes and probably reduce spending in that way, people will hear that and probably in their brain translate that as low-hanging fruit. The thing is that might be available this winter, right? I mean, you're going to have players who are non-tendered. You're going to have outfielders who are ready to be traded because they're in arbitration. You're going to have a couple guys, free agents, who are going to look for the best one-year deal they can get to recreate their value so that next year, albeit a year where the CBA is expiring, if finances kind of get back and, you're talking about full stadiums for 2022 and spending is back in vogue for teams, then that's when they want to be available to be free agents.
I would assume that the appetite for Molina to come back is pretty good on both sides. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I would agree that I'm eager to see if Molina has a wandering eye and who engages in that conversation. There are a couple teams in New York that are looking for, that might be looking for a veteran catcher. Molina has been very candid. He hasn't wavered from the fact that he would prefer to return to the Cardinals. He obviously wants to make a salary that he feels is fair. Recognizes that that's going to be scaled back from what he has been making over the last few years. But he wants to play. He wants to be around with the Cardinals. And you and I both know, and I'm sure you've heard the same thing that I have. Ownership has put a value on legacy players. The ownership has said that in this case, because you're not talking about a 10-year deal with, three-time MVP, kind of spending. In this case, they really they like the idea of having a one-team guy be their guy. And Molina is that guy. He's the one that defines that for them.
What are some of the names, Derek, of the, free agents to be or maybe arbitration players that don't make it that you think could fit the Cardinals coming up in 2021?
Yeah, I think, the arbitration one, I'm still kind of working through those names because, that doesn't exactly it doesn't crystallize here for another little bit, probably, 2, 3, 4 weeks from now, because you got teams that'll be like, all right, well, can we trade this guy? Okay, well, can we work out an extension with this guy? Do we want to? So there's that kind of stuff is going on. I think the free agents, there's Springer. There's a sense that Springer's going to try to go for the big contract, though. And then there's, in this World Series, there's a guy, Jock Peterson, hit a home run
right
in game 5.
Destroys right-handed pitching.
Has spent his life as a matchup man for the, basically platooned most of his career with the data-oriented Dodgers. Does that mean that, for his next team, that could mean, okay, we'll follow that script and get him out there against right-handed pitching and enjoy. For him, it could mean trying to find a team that might give him some shots against left-handed pitching just so he can round out his resume a little bit, show that he, improve in that regard, show that he can do that and then go for the big money later. I mean, he's got talent. He's a good defender. He's got legit power. And as you said, he just mauls right-handed pitching. And you know what there's a lot of in the game, Dan?
Right-handed pitching?
Right-handed pitching. he's 28 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. So little tidbit on that, too. He's also pals with Albert Pujols. So the family is close to Albert Pujols.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, there's a tie there. That's actually how I was introduced to Jock Peterson many, many years ago, was through Albert. And Tiger Peterson is a hitting coach in the Cardinals minor league system, his brother.
Right. I knew that. He would be a fit. I look at him. I think he's a fit. And I just think it's going to be, as we wrap it up, one of the most intriguing, fun off seasons potentially, because there's going to be so many guys that do not get tenured. They tendered. They just don't get the deal. they become a free agent. And all of a sudden, like you said, there could be those that are out there looking for that one-year deal and then re-hit the market in when the economy and when our lives kind of come back to quote-unquote normal.
Yeah, and you ask a good question as to what are the names out there. And you know, I mean, my thought on that is, like, I could throw out a bunch of names and speculate. My preference is to kind of track those down.
Sure.
And know. So that's why, I mean, they're, you know, that you look at the Rays outfield, right? Okay. You got Renfro and Margot and Kiermaier and Arozarena. They're not going to bring all those guys back. They'll bring back Arozarena because he's a rookie next year. He'd make the minimum. But the Rays aren't going to move on from somebody. You know, you have, what are the Rockies going to do with some of their outfielders and their spending and then their look to trim costs? I mean, it really looks like that's an area where they may have to make some calls just to reduce payroll. So it's things like that. I mean, you know, we can cast out some names, but it's going to be a real fascinating sort of lead into December. As teams look to move those guys. And so, you know, the Cardinals, if they can position themselves well, they don't have to wait for that non-tender. They just have to have their ears open for who's going to be and then try to trade.
Derek, great information. Appreciate it so much. Enjoying your work down in Texas, and we'll see what happens in Game 6 tomorrow. Thanks so much at the Post-Dispatch, all your work.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Yep, I'm happy to be here. It's a nice little challenge, and it's. I think it's important. We know how big a baseball town St. Louis is. Part of that is providing baseball coverage for them. So it's important to be at events like this, and you can't beat. Hopefully, rise to the occasion, because certainly you can't beat a game like Game 4.
That was
and sort of what that was for baseball, and what that could be for baseball coverage.
No doubt. That's Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.